Welcome to the Made Up Savannah podcast. I'm your host, Dee Daniels. Made Up Savannah is a creative production of Corcoran Austin Hill Realty, serving Savannah since 1978. And the Made Up Savannah podcast is brought to you by Savoy Society, colleagues and lovers, and the Savannah Cabaret. Who's looking for a fun night out? I'm always raising my hand for that. It's about that time of year when we'll have some family coming into town, and of course, you want to entertain them with something new and totally fun. Well, we have just the thing. Savannah's best live music and theater experience, it's Savannah Cabaret. And you're in luck. Tickets are now on sale for the production of Mel Brooks' Young Frankenstein at savannahcabaret.com. Tickets are on sale, savannahcabaret.com. This production is going to be everything. But you need to reserve your tickets because they will sell fast. I promise you that. The show runs April 18th through May 5th. Go ahead and get your tickets now before they sell out. Based on the classic 1974 movie, it's the hilarious show that tells the story of Dr. Frankenstein's grandson, Frederick, who is struggling to create his own legacy separate from his family's name. It's going to be a monstrous good time on Jefferson Street in historic Savannah. A fabulous cast and a laugh out loud great time, but only if you have tickets. SavannahCabaret.com. And later this year, we've got time traveling drag queens in the 1960s, maybe a little case of the cabaret killer. Doesn't that sound fun? Go get your tickets at SavannahCabaret.com. That's SavannahCabaret.com. Welcome to the Made Up Savannah podcast. I'm Dee Daniels. And listeners, I'm so excited. We are on location at Savannah Cabaret and it is happening. I'm with the one and only Rick Garman. And Rick is the founder of Savannah Cabaret. Rick, I love the fact that you're here because when I got to know you and I got into your bio a little bit, I'm going to tell everybody you're going to be real excited to see what else Rick does in addition to the Savannah Cabaret. But it makes sense. Like, it is fate that you came to Savannah because Savannah is like walking through a movie. Savannah's really like living in a movie. Am I right?
It really is. Yeah.
And the fact that you write movies, the fact that you write some of the most romantic, picturesque feeling, all the things, all the scenery movies from Hallmark and the Christmas movies, and now you're here, it all makes sense.
It makes sense to me. It was a lot of weird twists of fate that brought me here. But when I first came here, I was doing research for a novel that I've been writing that I had set in Savannah, and I knew immediately. I just fell in love as soon as I got here and then started visiting a lot. And every time I came, it felt like I was coming home.
Oh, I love
every
that.
Time.
I love that. I hear that a lot. Yeah. And we felt the same way. I mean, when we moved from Virginia, we were like, when we come to visit, we're like, oh, this is where we're supposed to be.
Right.
Yeah.
And I never expected to be here. I always knew that I would move here eventually, but I didn't expect to be here as soon as I came. COVID changed a lot of stuff,
right?
In the world. So I've been here now for almost 4 years, and it is one of the best decisions that I've ever made.
I love that.
Yeah.
Savannah Cabaret, by the way, if you don't know, if you haven't heard, is one of our fantastic sponsors this season on the Made of Savannah podcast. We're so happy to have you guys as a sponsor. This has been a great partnership because this podcast is all about storytelling, and it's all about, you know, bringing stories of people that are in Savannah, but also people that want to be in Savannah and people that are adding to the community in Savannah. And I think, I feel like that's what you're about, not only in your profession, but that is what Savannah Cabaret is about too, is it's storytelling.
It really is. When we started the company, it was right after COVID and I had just moved here and I miss absolutely nothing about Los Angeles, like nothing, except for the fact that if on any given night I wanted to go out and see a show, I had 10 different options.
Right.
Here in Savannah, that's not quite the case, especially after COVID. So I partnered with some people here and I said, hey, if nobody's going to entertain me, I'll entertain myself.
Right.
So, hey, come on, kids, let's put on a show in our barn. And we've got this great stage here, this great theater here at Club One that doesn't get used as much as it could.
Yeah.
And lots of talented people that I had become friends with that don't have as much of an opportunity. There's not a lot of opportunities to get out and perform. So it all just came together. And we started as a fairly regular cabaret, people standing at a microphone and singing. But since then, we've evolved through me writing original works, telling original stories with popular music, cabaret performances. And now we're doing our first full-blown musical. So
yeah.
It's been a great evolution over the last few years.
We're excited about Young Frankenstein. I don't want to make you sweat. We are literally almost
yep.
here. And so, which is one of the reasons we actually came and wanted to chat with you here on the stage. You know, you're getting ready to have rehearsal in just a little bit. You know, everybody's already set. It's ready to go. You know, things are happening. You're putting the finishing touches on. And now it's really just about getting the word out and telling folks, you know, where to go, how to get the tickets, all that sort of thing. Because I have a feeling once it starts, like tickets are going to go super fast.
It really is hard to get attention in this town. There's so few media outlets in this town.
Right.
And people sort of pay attention to what they pay attention to.
Yeah.
So I appreciate you having me on.
Of course.
And not just because I'm a sponsor,
right.
but because we're doing this really cool show.
Yeah.
Driving people to SavannahCabaret.com to get tickets is often a challenge, but we really believe in what we do all year, but especially with this show.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a special, funny, original, I think highly underrated show.
Yeah.
This is the, for people who don't know, 2024 is the 50th anniversary of the original movie. Came out in 1974.
Is that why you picked to do it now?
No, I actually didn't realize that until after we had picked it. And then it just seemed like fate, you know, it's like, oh, cool. But yeah, Mel Brooks had two movies in 1974, Blazing Saddles and Young Frankenstein in 1974. And so, honoring that and with such a movie that is so many people's favorite, you know, it's on so many top comedies of all time mm-hmm. list, and everybody who's seen it knows all the gags. They know Frau Blücher and you hear the horse whinny. They know getting caught in the bookcase, put the candle back.
Right.
And they know Igor saying, walk this way. No, mm-hmm. no, this way. They know all those jokes. But even if you don't know the movie, all you really need to know is the Frankenstein legend. And everybody knows the Frankenstein
yeah,
legend.
Yeah.
You know, Victor Frankenstein created a monster. It went poorly.
Yes.
And this is the story of what happens when his grandson comes to town and has to create his own monster.
Yeah.
And it doesn't go well.
Right.
But
right.
in very funny musical ways.
Yeah.
And this musical adaptation was written by Mel Brooks. He co-wrote the book and he wrote all of the music and the lyrics. So the music is laugh out loud funny. It is earworm type stuff, tap your toe, all big and fun and Broadway and jazz, vaudeville type stuff that just sticks in your brain. The entire cast keeps, when we come in, we're like, what song did you wake up with it stuck in your head? But it doesn't, it's actually okay because they're such great songs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I don't know how you cannot get those stuck in your head. I mean, it really is one of the, it's cult classic. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, it's got that, all every bit of it to it. And it's got the, you know, just the full on addictive, mm-hmm. you know, feeling not only to the words, but the music. And I know you guys are wanting to do that justice. Definitely.
Oh, absolutely. Honoring what is a classic movie that so many people love
yeah.
is very important to us. So we are doing our best to pay homage to the movie without doing a straight carbon copy.
Right.
And the musical is different. You know, there are obviously there's songs that weren't in Putting in the Ritz
sure.
is in the movie.
Yeah.
There's a huge production number with top hats and canes in the musical. But then there's a lot of other songs that obviously aren't in the movie.
Right.
So it's a different piece of art that stands on its own. But we wanted to pay homage to it as much as we could. And we're also doing some little winks and nods putting in some Easter eggs to Mel Brooks himself.
Oh, so fun.
There's going to be little things that are, we're not going to point it out. We're not going to comment on it, but there's going to be little things that happen in the show, little character things, little moments, little things around the stage that are nods to other Mel Brooks movies.
Oh, fun.
And so
I love that.
Mel Brooks fans may see it and go, oh, that's from High Anxiety. Hey, that's from Blazing Saddles.
Right. You're going to have, I mean, from the moment people come in, you're going to have a tip of the hat to Mel Brooks. I mean, all the way, they're going to be able to see all the way coming up the stairs and when they come in the room and everything. It's going to be a little bit over here, a little history kind of museum pieces going on.
Right. We're doing a pop-up museum as part of our pre-show. So an hour before the show starts, the doors will open. We're having cocktail hour, and there will be a Mel Brooks pop-up museum with exhibits and photos and memorabilia of all of his, a lot of his movies, focusing on Young Frankenstein. We're going to be playing clips of his movies. So it's going to be a really fun thing for audiences to sort of get in the Mel Brooks world, you know, he's a comedy legend.
Yeah.
An EGOT winner.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's so Savannah that you're doing that, by the way. People love that.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Just come and like soak up the history.
Yep.
Enjoy the show.
Yep.
I mean, that's so Savannah. I love that.
We love doing a pre-show for all of our productions because it's actually something I learned. I went to Broadway Con and there was somebody presenting who was talking about a show that they were doing that was a funny show, but the audience wasn't really laughing until sort of the second song. Even though the first song was funny, it took them a minute to settle in.
Right.
So they added a pre-show element, a funny pre-show element. And from that moment on, from the very first song, the audience was in. They were laughing at everything.
They were ready to go.
Yeah. So we love doing that for ourselves as well. When we did our Christmas show, we had Bad Carolers. So they came out and they couldn't agree what song, and they were singing off key, and they started too high and all sorts of stuff. We had selfie stations. We're going to have that here Mel Brooks as well. We've got a Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein cutout that we're going to be setting up. We'll have a step and repeat. All sorts of fun stuff to sort of get audiences to come and be a part of the family and just sit down when the curtain, proverbial curtain goes up. They're ready to just have a good time.
Yeah. It's like having the bread to the table before
exactly.
the meal, people,
exactly.
you know, that's so good. I don't care who you are. Even if you're like, I don't do gluten and they bring the bread, right?
Exactly.
They bring the bread and you're like, yes,
I
was starving. Okay. So right SavannahCabaret.com is the place to go to get your tickets. Go ahead and get those and get all that situated because if you wait too long, and the show starts, I'm just saying. You know,
there are still tickets available for all performances right now, but we are either sold out or getting close to sold out on certain ticket types. So we have some front row table seats, we have second row table seats, and we have general admission. Some of those ticket types on certain dates are either sold out or very close to selling out.
Wow.
So if you want some of the really, really good seats at your own two-person table, which comes with extra little treats. There's always a candy bag and other little fun things. You want to get those now because those will most likely sell out.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah. No doubt about it. Hey, quick side note. I don't know about you and your friend group, but our friends, well, and we are too, are always looking for a great brunch spot. And I've got the perfect thing for you. It's our wonderful partners, colleagues and lovers in Habersham Village. They are now serving lunch, and yes, my friends, brunch on Saturday and Sunday. But check this out. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 11 to 3, you can go to Colleagues and Lovers in Habersham Village and get a fabulous lunch. Yes, you can also get cocktails because that's how we roll in Savannah. They've got Bloody Mary on the menu, mimosa on the menu, and the other stuff, coffee, tea, iced tea, Coke, you know. But more importantly, the food. Let's talk about the salads. Balsamic beet salad, a chef salad, and fabulous looking sandwiches. 5-spice chicken, roast beef. Ooh, a good chicken salad sandwich. Doesn't that sound nice? And of course, they've got pasta at Colleagues and Lovers. But check this out. Brunch on Saturday and Sunday. You can get pancakes, plain or blueberry. And I love Eggs Benedict. Take your friends, make a date. You're going to love it. Colleagues and Lovers, 4523 Habersham Street, Habersham Village. colleaguesandloverssavannah.com if you want to check out the lunch menu, the dinner menu, the brunch menu, and more importantly, the drink menu. So the show, tell us the dates of the show, the run.
We start Thursday, April 18th, and we run for 3 weekends, Thursday nights at 8 o'clock, Friday nights at 7 o'clock, Saturday matinee at 3 o'clock, and Sunday night at 7 o'clock. So nice. 3 weekends from April 18th through May 5th.
I love that. I love that we're also right here on the corner of Jefferson and Bay.
Yes.
We're at Club One. If you've come to Club One before and seen a great drag show, you've come for drag bingo or whatever, this is the spot to come to. And it's so great that you guys perform here. I mean, I feel like it's such a great relationship with the Club One history in the building and right here in historic downtown.
And the Lady Chablis, you know, she was an icon of Savannah.
No doubt.
Yeah, being on this stage, I never got the chance to see Lady Chablis.
Same.
Every time I came to town, she was at that point was only performing like once a month. So I had finally bought a ticket. She was going to be performing on my 50th birthday.
Oh, wow.
And I had bought a ticket and I was so excited to be here to finally see the Lady Chablis. And a few days before the show, they canceled it. And then she passed away 2 weeks later.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So I never got a chance to see her. But to be on this stage that, you know, she helped make famous. But the other thing is that, you know, one of the things I'm most proud of with Savannah Cabaret, when I came here, I started meeting people because I'm going to finish a sentence, I promise.
You're a writer, for God's sake.
Exactly.
Finish
if I don't
sentence.
Have a script, then, you know, I have an issue. But this is actually one of the things when I write, I actually write like this.
Do you?
With the sentence, because people rarely talk in
That's
complete
true.
Sentences.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah.
So I'll write with lots of ellipses, and the right. sentence will start this way, and then it'll go that way, and then it'll go that way. Anyway, when I first moved here, because I worked in the bars for so long in Los Angeles, I worked at bars around LA for 20 plus years, I always make friends with bar people. And so when I came here, I started making friends with the people who work at this club. And it's a lot of the people who will be on stage and who are in most of our shows, but also in Young Frankenstein, they work here. So we've got the general manager is playing Travis Harold Coles. He's playing Igor. The assistant manager, Trey Norris, he's playing Dr. Frankenstein. The DJ that does all the drag shows, Gwen, she is playing Elizabeth. The karaoke DJ is playing the monster. So we've got lots of people who work in this building
That's
who are
fantastic.
Just super talented.
Yeah.
But they all became my friends, and it's a family here. And I know that sounds like a cliche, but I always start every rehearsal of every show by saying the same speech every time. A lot of people have heard this a million times. It is, we're not going to get famous from this. I'm paying you, but you certainly ain't going to get rich.
Right.
We're not going to Broadway. We're not going to win any awards. So the only reason to do this is to have fun and to put on a really good show.
That's right.
And if we're not having fun, why are we doing this?
Right.
And so I have a strict no assholes policy.
Right.
I'm too old, but I haven't needed it because people just come together and they have a good time and they put in the work and we've never had any serious drama. We've never had, you know, it's just people wanting to put on a show and entertain people. And I think that audiences, when they come, they feel that.
Yeah.
You know, we may not be we're not Broadway caliber entertainment here, but you're also not paying Broadway prices.
Right.
I think people feel how much our cast, our crew, everybody involved in Savannah Cabaret is just committed to entertaining people and to having a great time and wanting to see people smile and walk out having felt like they spent a good night out in Savannah.
Yeah, we want an experience here. Yeah. You know, I think everybody that lives here, it's like, and people that are visiting, obviously, certainly, but I mean, you still want that experience. I mean, we've been living here now for almost 3 years. We still want to have an experience every single time we come downtown, every single time we go to a show, doesn't matter what it is. It's like, I want to feel like I had just a flipping good time for hours. I want to leave a little sweaty and a lot less stressed.
There's so much of that in the ethos of what we do.
Yeah.
But it extends beyond that in terms of when I go to, again, I used to work in nightclubs for a long time, but when I go to a nightclub now, I need something more than just music and a drink.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And there's so many fantastic clubs that have popped up where they do pop-up entertainment.
Yeah.
You know, you'll be on the dance floor and all of a sudden the dance floor will shut down and there'll be a drag queen or a
yes.
juggler or an acrobat that'll pop up somewhere.
So good.
There'll be people doing interactive stuff. And I think people really, they crave that.
Yeah.
Even if they don't know they crave mm-hmm. that. Because once they go to those things, then they're like, well, I can never go to a regular nightclub again.
Right. It's boring.
It's boring.
Yes.
And we sort of feel the same way about shows. Mm-hmm. That one of the cool things that we're going to be doing here in the showroom for Young Frankenstein is that the action is not going to take place just on the stage.
Right.
It's taking place through the entire theater. It's going to happen behind you. It's going to be happening around you. It's going to be happening in and around the seats themselves. So it's not quite immersive, but it is a different experience than walking into a traditional theater and sitting in a seat and watching the show up there.
Yeah.
You're going to feel like you're sort of in it.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's my favorite. I can't go anywhere now because I mean, any group that we're with, I'm always like, could we go somewhere where we've at least got a pool table
right.
and some sort of show that's going to be happening? And can I just something else? And so that's what you're going to give a full on experience.
Yep.
And it's going to take up the entire stage, the entire crowd. Everybody's going to be a part of it. I love it. So we're super excited about that. Go get your tickets. And we're going to be talking about the other shows that are going to be happening the rest of this year here in just a minute. But I gotta talk a little bit about your background because I love Hallmark so much. I love it. I am a cheesy romantic at heart. And I gotta say, if you're writing, which I know you are, I've seen it on your bio. I've seen it on IMDb. If you're writing Hallmark Christmas movies, you've got to be a little bit of a romantic too.
You know, a lot of people who know me well have a hard time believing that I write these movies.
Yeah.
Because I'm really just not like
You're
that.
You're like, no, thank
I'm
you.
Really not.
But I can write it.
I can write it.
It's in there somewhere.
It's in there somewhere. Yeah. For me, it's about finding universal themes.
Yeah.
I've written movies that are obviously a lot of Christmas movies, but I've written movies that deal with faith.
Mm.
And that's not a huge part of my life.
I love that.
But I'm able to key into the things like having faith in myself or having faith in other people or having faith in the universe, for lack of a better word.
The fact that you'll find a parking space in Savannah somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know that I have faith in that at all. But no matter what the topic is, I'm always able to find something that I can connect to that gives me, through my own experience, the ability to imbue these characters with what I hope is a little bit of extra reality in life and things that other people can connect to. I'll tell you a quick story of how I learned this to be the case and how it translated eventually into my movies. I started as a playwright very long time ago, had a couple of plays that did very, very well, won some awards. And one of them dealt with a man who was brought up on murder charges after he helps his terminally ill lover who was suffering from AIDS end his life.
Mm.
And it tells their love story. So through the testimony of the trial, you flash back and see how they first met and their first date. And, you know, it tells their entire story. So you really become invested in these characters. And then it gets to the part where one of them is dying and his partner agrees to help him end his life.
Right.
So after one of the performances at the theater, this woman came up to me and she was probably in her 60s, I want to say. And she walked up and she said, "You're the writer." And I said, "Yes." She said, "I just want to tell you," and she paused, and I might get emotional telling this story, and I apologize.
It's okay.
But it's still such a powerful memory. She paused, and then she said, "My husband had cancer. Do you understand?"
Ah.
And what she was saying to me is that this story of two young gay men, one of whom was suffering from AIDS, connected to her because she had gone through the same thing in losing the love of her life. And understanding how art and theater and writing can connect to people, even if it's not a direct connection. That taught me a lesson that I have tried to keep in everything that I write. Mm. Even the silly comedies, everything from the some of the silly shows we do for Savannah Cabaret, to the Hallmark movies, to anything that I write, I try to find ways to make it universal enough so that somebody's going to find a way to connect somewhere.
Right. Damn it, Rick. That gave me chills. And
it was
brought
a great moment.
Tears to my corner of my eyeballs. At the end of the day, that's what it's always about, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it doesn't matter if we're doing a podcast, if we're writing an article, if we're doing a show, if we're writing a movie, it doesn't matter what it is. It's about, are we connecting and how do we do it? And the element to me and all the podcasts that we do and all the guests that we have and all the stories that we tell, that the underlying theme underneath all of it is if we could get vulnerable enough to share something that somehow will resonate with someone because it's a human experience. That's where it's all at.
Right. Which is, you know, what a lot of the Hallmark movies
right.
are about. It's if you boil down what they are, it's yeah. about looking for love.
Right.
It's about community.
Yeah.
It's about friendships. It's about wanting to find your path in life.
Right.
And who hasn't gone through all of those things?
Yeah.
Who can't... Everybody can identify with some element of that. It's just what gets layered on top is a lot of, you know, what a lot of people will describe as sort of, you know, the cheesy yeah. kind of TV movie,
and,
the snow
you know,
and the caroling and the baking and the cookies
yeah,
and the, you know, all that kind of stuff.
And,
exactly.
Yeah.
So, but I think one of the reasons that people love them is because they understand that underneath it's about people falling in love.
Yeah.
It's about wanting to celebrate Christmas with your family and your
right,
friends and
right.
community and all that stuff. So
how many Christmas movies have you written?
I have
written?
Lost track.
Have you really?
I really have. I honestly don't know anymore. I believe that the one that was on in December of last year, Christmas on Cherry Lane, I believe that was my 14th, but I could be wrong.
I feel like that was a pretty big one. Yes.
It was a big one. We had a big splashy premiere in New York. And it got nominated for a GLAAD Media Award,
right.
which is interesting. The play that I was just talking about was called Mountains. That was in 1998. That won a GLAAD Media Award.
Right.
And so now, circling back 20 however many years later, don't make me do math.
God, how old are you?
I'm
Jesus.
So old. Turning to dust. But to be nominated for a GLAAD Media Award for a Hallmark movie.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Because, you know, Hallmark has gotten a sometimes justified bad rap. They are evolving and changing, obviously. But to have a movie that had two out actors, Jonathan Bennett and Vincent Rodriguez, playing an out married couple who were adopting or who were getting a foster child, written by an out screenwriter, getting nominated for a GLAAD Media Award. I know that's not changing the world, but it's not nothing.
That's a big deal.
You know what I mean?
I do.
And for people to hopefully see that and embrace that along with the other stories that were in that movie, I think it certainly means something to me.
No doubt.
So.
No doubt. I feel like I sort of already know the answer to this next question because of the story that you shared, but how important is it to you and how do you think about, you know, I'm thinking about the GLAAD Media stuff, but how important is it to you that you resonate with all of the audiences? You know, I mean, there is a huge LGBTQ plus all the things community here in Savannah, in the Low Country, folks that come up from Florida to be a part of it. The First City Pride here is growing and so many things are expanding here. Pride here in general is like massive, and so many people come and yet you resonate with not just that audience, you resonate with so many others. How important is that connection that you're able to touch all of those audiences?
I would love to be able, that if every project had some sort of element that could reach out and touch a lot of different groups. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's not up to me, but certainly the works that I try to do here at SavannahCabaret.com, get your tickets for Young Frankenstein now. The works that I do here and the works that I do through the television movies, I always sort of go big. Sometimes it gets drawn back.
Yeah.
And it is important when I can accomplish that.
Right. Does that hurt your feelings when it gets drawn back?
I don't think it hurts my feelings because I understand the reality of it.
At this point, you've got to have some thick skin with that, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, look, you know, I got pulled into the, I don't talk about this very much, but I got pulled into the controversy with Candace Cameron Bure.
Really?
So I've written a couple of movies for Candace. And she has never been anything but kind and gracious and supportive and loving to me. She knows that I'm gay. And despite some of the things that she said, she doesn't act on that personally. And so it was a movie that I had written called A Christmas Present that was on Great American Family that was coming out right after the big kerfuffle. We'll just call it the big kerfuffle.
That's a good name for it.
The incident.
Yes.
I took a lot of heat for that from both sides of the coin. I had a lot of I had friends who were coming to me and like, how can you do this? You should be ashamed of yourself. And you know, you're a traitor for doing this.
And it's like going to Chick-fil-A during a certain time.
Yeah, exactly. And much to her credit, when Candace found out about this, she reached out to me personally and felt horrible about it. It devastated her to know that I was getting that kind of attack. The point I'm attempting to make of all this is that in art, and this is a lesson that I try to teach people when I young writers, young if I'm ever mentoring or doing a class or something like that, is in art, all forms of art, but especially in writing, you may believe that you're going to have complete control and be able to say and do whatever it is that you want, and you're never going to get notes. But unless you're going to write it, direct it, produce it, pay for it, star in it, market it, distribute it, and do all of that stuff all by yourself, you're going to get notes from somebody.
Right.
You're going to have to potentially change your vision,
yeah,
or walk away from it. Mm. That's your choice often. And so the question is, how far are you willing to go? How much are you willing to give away to be able to see your art, to be able to see your vision come through? And that movie with Candace, that's one of the ones that I was mentioning that had a lot of faith elements in it. And I kept saying to the producer that I was working with, as long as they're not being horrible, as long as they're not saying things like, you know, they don't want me to put a line in there that's like, oh gosh, I love this little town because there's no gay people in it.
Right.
You know, then what's the problem?
Yeah.
And it all it comes down to is that channel and Hallmark to a certain degree, much less degree, they've identified a market and they program to that market.
Sure.
And as long as they're not being awful about it, then I don't have a problem being a part of it because
right.
I can hopefully then contribute a perspective that can change the conversation. And, you know, I also then take their money and go spend it on things like producing time traveling drag queens, you know? So
it all comes around. Drag,
you know, so
it all comes around.
you do what you have to do,
of course.
I think
that's a great piece of advice too for, I think, especially our young SCAD folks here, that we have such a creative town, huge town, and such a creative pool for people that are wanting to write and wanting to be in movies and do all the things. And I think because you and I are older, we can say these things. I think that's a hard lesson for young people in that generation, I think, to hear and learn is that you're going to answer to someone in the process.
Yep. I'll tell you another quick story that gives another great example. That same play, Mountains, when I was working with the producer at the theater to do it, she came to me and said, I need you to write another scene. Because in the first draft, there was no scene where the one that's dying asks his partner to help him end his life. I didn't think it was necessary. I wasn't quite sure how to write it. I thought it might be too melancholy, too melodramatic. I just wasn't sure how to do it, and so I didn't want to include that scene. And I got really frustrated because I was in my 20s, and so I was frustrated all the time. That's right. What your 20s are about, is being annoyed and frustrated.
Yes.
So, and I sort of, you know, stomped around a little bit. And then finally, I was sitting at my desk at like 2 o'clock in the morning, and there was a for whatever reason, there was a stack of Trivial Pursuit cards in a box on my desk. I don't remember why. But I was so annoyed about having to write this scene, and I couldn't figure out how to do it. I picked up the box and I slammed it down on the table, and the scene was just there. And it starts with the character who's dying coming out and slamming the cards on the table and saying, asking his partner to ask him a question. And he finally does, and he can't remember the answer, even though it's something he knows that he knows, because he started to suffer from AIDS-related dementia. Mm. And it gets to the point where he says, I don't want to hit the point where I don't remember you.
Right. Wow.
And it wound up becoming not only my favorite scene in the play, but probably the most powerful scene in the play.
Right.
And it was a scene that I didn't want to write, but another lesson that I learned is that, people have good ideas.
Yes.
You know, especially people who've been doing this for a long time.
You're not the only brain in the room.
And not the only brain in the room.
Yeah.
And I'm very lucky, I believe, that my success as a writer came later in my life. I would have loved to have been made writing as my career when I was younger. But I didn't, up until I was 50, I had a very high paying full-time job in the internet world. I worked my way into this weird little movie world and was able to quit my job at 50 and become a writer full-time. But coming to that success late in life, I think helped me have a perspective that I never would have had in my 20s.
So sure.
I understand, I have a perspective now, all the things that I've been through. Those of you who are out there can't see me, but if you look at my picture, I have a lot of words tattooed on my arm.
Yes.
And my favorite one right up here on my bicep is perspective.
Ah,
and I think it's
a good one.
It's hugely important because things like having gone through cancer, things like having lost a lot of people. You know, I grew up in LA in the AIDS era, and I've had a lot of loss in my life.
Right.
I've learned a lot of stuff in my life, and so I think all of that has given me a perspective that I never would have had if all of this had come earlier, and I probably would have blown it.
Mm.
So I'm very, very grateful that it has come when it has come.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, I feel your passion in what I've seen already. And I know that our listeners are very excited to not only come and see Young Frankenstein, but the lineup for the rest of the year is going to be really, really cool too. Can we get a sneak peek into what's to come?
For the Savannah Cabaret?
Yeah.
Yes. So after this in June, we are having another installment of our very popular series called Time Traveling Drag Queens. So it's about three modern day drag queens who find a time travel device. And in the first year, they went back to 1940 and they helped a USO troupe put on a show. So it was filled with all sorts of great 1940s music. Then at the end of that show, they hit the time travel device and they traveled. Our next installment, they went to the 1980s.
Ooh.
And helped a high school put on prom. And so it was filled with all sorts of great 80s music. This year, they are going to be going to the 1960s.
Wow.
And I can give you breaking information, which is that it's going to be set in an airport and on an airplane.
Oh, wow.
So there may be 1960s stewardess outfits.
The whole thing is going to take place on the airplane?
The second act is going to take place on the airplane. If we're going to figure out how to do it, it's going to take place on an airplane.
How about that?
I come up with these crazy ideas, and then people look at me, and I'm like, yeah, we can do this.
We can figure it out.
We'll figure it out. Anyway, so that's going to be in late June, and all of our original, I just got a confirmation for one of our actors who does one of the drag queens. He had never done drag before. He has only done it for our shows, but he's a successful actor. He's playing in New York and in Miami. He's going to come back and do the show. So I just got that confirmation. I'm excited about that. Then in August, we're going to have another murder mystery. Our murder mysteries are a little bit different in that in the first act, you meet all the people involved, all the characters involved, and they'll have a monologue or a short scene, and then they'll sing a song. For instance, last year, it was a disco show. So it was set in a nightclub in 1979, and we had all these crazy disco characters who would come out and introduce themselves and tell who they are and sing a disco song. And then at intermission, the audience goes on their phone and they're able to vote for who gets killed.
Oh, wow.
Who the murderer is and how the murder happened. Then we backstage very quickly change the second act based upon how the audience votes.
Oh my
so
gosh.
We don't know how the second act's going to go until the end of intermission.
Oh, fun.
So
fun for us as the audience, I mean.
So, and it's a thing that you can come to multiple nights because for our disco show, we did three performances. It was they picked different people every night.
Oh, wow.
So depending on who the show, who the murderer is, it all just sort of goes different ways and who gets killed. Everybody in the cast the murderer gets to sing a special song at the end in all of these shows. And so everybody in the cast has to learn that song,
right.
But only one person gets to do it. Yeah.
I love that.
This year it was Staying Alive.
Oh, nice.
But we're going to have another murder mystery yet. We have an idea for a theme, but it's not completely locked down. And then in December, we're going to be doing another Christmas show. This past December, we did a show called Christmas in Mistletoe Falls. That was our most successful show ever.
Is that a nod to Hallmark?
It was a parody of Christmas movies.
Mm.
And I hope that nobody at Hallmark ever sees it or hears about it because they'll never let me write another one. But it was a very funny show that really poked fun at the genre and that I know a little bit about. But we're going to have a sequel to that. It's going to be Christmas in Mistletoe Falls 2.
Ooh.
Yeah. So
if you haven't seen one,
we will explain
it okay?
to you.
Okay.
We will explain it to you. There will be previously on Christmas in Mistletoe
Love that.
Falls.
Perfect.
So somebody will come out and explain what happened in the previous installment. So you don't need to see that.
I gotta feel like that Hallmark appreciates a little bit of the poking because like to the brand, come on. I mean, years ago I was doing a morning show in the DC area and we had a full on like drinking game that was Hallmark Christmas movie related. And it was like, you know, there was a whole sheet and a thing. And yet people afterwards were watching the movies.
Oh, yeah.
Like you got to appreciate it a little bit.
I know all the people that work there absolutely appreciate it. It's just from a brand perspective, I'm joking when I say they'd never let me write another one, but,
you're too good. Of course they're not gonna,
it's like I said, because I'm writing currently three more for this year, three more Christmas movies for this year. So I guess that's 15, 16, 17, maybe. And then I'm going to have four other movies, on this year, probably. Which I think takes me up over 40 total in the last 7 or 8 years.
Wow.
So yeah, I've done a few of these.
Yeah.
I don't know this for sure, but I don't think there's anybody that's written as many as me. I could be wrong about that. If there is, it's we're a very small,
that's amazing.
Very small, group.
And you dabbled in the acting part of things and then decided that wasn't where your heart was?
Yeah. You know, when I was growing up, I wanted to be an actor. I found drama, which quite literally saved my life because I was an overweight child and didn't have a lot of friends when I was young. And being involved in the theater saved me in a lot of ways. And so I wanted to be an actor. I moved to LA to become an actor, went to acting school. And after graduating, said, no, that's not for me. I
What didn't you like about it?
It was just, I very clearly remember walking out of the audition. I've told this story many times before, but I walked out of the audition and I just had a vision. I just sort of saw where my life would go if I pursued this and it wasn't good. It was going to end badly.
Oh, wow.
I knew enough about myself to know that to be treated the way that actors are treated in auditions and just in the industry in general, that I didn't have the stomach for it. I didn't have the self-confidence for it. I didn't have any of that. And I knew that it would have ended badly.
Wow.
And so I just said, no, I'm not doing this. And it wasn't until a few years later that I was working for the theater company that wound up doing the plays that I wrote. They needed a play. I said, I've been in plays. I've said plays. I could write a play. So I wrote a play and they did it. And that's that experience. One of the things I say all the time is that I love writing the Hallmark movies. I do. They mean something to me. I want them to be good. I want people to enjoy them. And I love the fact that they make so many people happy because I've written so many, things that I've written have been seen by tens of millions of people. And how many people get to say that the job that they did made tens of millions of people happy?
Oh my gosh, right?
You know, it's a very small, you know, so I'm so lucky to be a part of that. But having said that, there is nothing like being in a room and hearing people laugh or cry or gasp or applaud or whatever at something that you have either written or helped to create. Mm. There's no feeling like it in the world. It is drugs. It is full on
drugs.
It's
the only high you need.
It really is. And so I love having the balance. One of the reasons why I created and keep doing the Savannah Cabaret shows, even though they're a lot of work, is because it allows me to have both sides of that coin.
Yeah. You know? No doubt. Yeah. No doubt. Well, we're glad you're here doing it.
Thank
I can
you
tell
much.
You that. It's a big deal for it to be here in Savannah for this level of art to be here in Savannah. It's a big deal. And we're so happy to support it at the Made of Savannah podcast. And we're so happy that our listeners are going to come out and support it too. We're going to be giving our listeners another chance to win some tickets, by the way, to Young Frankenstein. So I hope that everybody will be watching Instagram for that. SavannahCabaret.com is the place to go get your tickets. And that's the place to see all of the shows that are coming up as well. So we want everybody to go check that out. I just think this is going to be a knockout show. And I'm so happy that it's here in Savannah. I mean, this is something that you would go and see, you know, anywhere in huge places, and we're going to have it here. I mean, that's amazing.
I'm excited to bring this kind of theater to Savannah. There's so many great theater companies here in town, and they do fantastic work. But a lot of them have their lane, you know, and you don't often see this kind of musical at the theater companies or we don't get a lot of touring shows around here either. So this kind of more recent musical, maybe a little bit underappreciated, it's great to be a part of that. And also to be able to have that kind of humor and do something good with it. Mm-hmm. As well. You know, in addition to entertaining audiences, if I can talk about this, we're going to be doing a charity auction.
Oh, that's right. Yes. I'm glad you brought that up. I forgot.
So every night before the show, we are going to be auctioning off a piece of Mel Brooks movie memorabilia. We're going to be raising money for Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS, which is, for those of you who don't know, is a fantastic organization that, in addition to helping people who are struggling with life-threatening illnesses like AIDS, they fund food banks in every state in the country. They step in after disasters. After the Maui fires, they funded a food bank in Maui. They've funded humanitarian efforts in Gaza and Israel.
Wow.
So they're just an incredible organization. $300 million of grants they've done over the last
however many years. Oh, that's amazing.
So we're going to be raising money for them. Every night before the show, we're going to auction off a piece of memorabilia. For instance, we have autographed pictures, an autographed picture of Cloris Leachman as Frau Blücher. It says Cloris Leachman, and she wrote Frau Blücher on it.
Oh, fun.
We have an autographed picture of Terry Garr as Inga in mm-hmm. the movie. We have Mel Brooks' soundtrack albums. We have a whole lobby card set from 1974 from Young Frankenstein.
Wow.
So this was what you would see in movie theaters. It's 8 11 by 14 photos. Very, very rare. We have a playbill signed by Sutton Foster, Tony Award-winning Sutton Foster, who originated the role of Inga in Young Frankenstein on Broadway. When the Bay Street Theater was doing Rocky here in October, Susan Sarandon was in town filming a movie. She came to see the show, and she brought Megan Mullally, who was also in the movie. Megan Mullally originated the role of Elizabeth in Young Frankenstein, so we got her to sign a vocal book.
Nice.
We're going to be auctioning that off. And then the really cool thing is we reached out to Brooks Films, and they sent us 6 copies of a Making of Young Frankenstein coffee table book. It's 200 pages. And Mr. Mel Brooks, comedy legend, EGOT winner, he signed those books just for us.
Oh, wow.
So he knows who we are,
oh,
which is just weird.
That's amazing.
You know, 97-year-old Mel Brooks knows that we are doing his show.
That's so
and he
awesome.
Signed these books. So every night, a different thing is going to be auctioned off. You can find out what's going to be auctioned when at savannahcabaret.com/auction.
Mm-hmm.
The caveat is you have to be here. So you have to be in the
yes.
room to bid on it. It's
okay.
not going to be an online auction.
Yeah.
It's not going to be anything else like that. these are really, really special pieces of memorabilia that we don't want going to, you know, somebody that's just going to turn around and sell it on eBay.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're saying just the people who are in this room. So if you want to bid on any of these things, you have to come see the show.
Yeah. So bring your butt and bring your money.
Bring your money. You take credit cards.
I love that. That's so fun. It's going to be a blast and so many things going on. So get your ticket, SavannahCabaret.com. Rick, I'm so glad to know you. And I think you're such a beautiful addition to Savannah. I'm glad that you're here sharing your art and your talent. And I'm not poking fun, but before we go, I did bring a mistletoe. And I'm just going to hold it right here. We can just lean in. Some light snow will be falling behind us.
Exactly, yes.
And we'll have a little smooch. But I can't wait to see everyone on stage. And we're going to hang out for the little bit of the rehearsal, too, tonight. So I'm excited. This is going to be such a great show. I know it's going to sell out as soon as it gets going. So SavannahCabaret.com. It's going to be great.
Thank you very much for having me, Dee. I really appreciate it. And thank you, Savannah.
This season, we're so proud to partner up with a trendsetter and a trend breaker in Savannah's historic district, the incomparable bar and restaurant that hits all the marks and sits right at 102 East Liberty Street. I'm talking about Savoy Society. You know, we fell in love with this downtown hotspot well before we even moved here, and it's captured our hearts even more as locals. Now, it's my favorite spot to grab a lemon drop martini. Mm-hmm. Hands down, best place to get a lemon drop martini. And I even like to try something new on occasion, like a sourdough flatbread, a slider, maybe even a new cocktail if I'm living dangerously. But don't even get me started on Me Gusta Mondays and the hot honey margarita, because once I tried that, Savoy Society, seriously, you had me at vinyl and wicker. The long bar, the cozy sofas, oh, and the pickled deviled eggs, and the mini hot dogs with the tots. It's a whole vibe. If you Google it, you'll see the popular opinion is the bartenders are just lovely. That's an understatement. They're really genuinely amazing. Stop by Savoy and tell them you heard about them on the Made of Savannah podcast. Savoy Society Sav, S-A-V, if you're looking for them on Instagram. Also, SavoySociety.com. Check out the full menu. You know, some people have a dream home. Some people have 10 dreams about buying property in 10 different places. At Cork and Austin Hill Realty, we always want you to live who you are, wherever and whatever that dream looks like. You hear businesses talking sometimes about how long they have served a city, but do you ever stop and wonder if they mean that's how long they've been in business there? Or do they really mean that's how long they've served that community? Corcoran Austin Hill Realty truly serves Savannah. Yes, I mean the region, but I really mean the people, the history, the business developers, the nonprofits, all communities, all backgrounds, the buyers, the sellers, the investors, the mom and pop shop owners, the first time home seekers, the young, the matured, and we've been doing it, serving you, since 1978. Corcoran Austin Hill Realty sits beautifully at the corner of Liberty and Bull Streets in historic Savannah, home of the Made of Savannah podcast studios, and home to a huge group of people ready to serve you. 251 Bull Street, Savannah. Stop in, ask questions, see local artists at Location Gallery, and check out available listings at CorcoranAHR.com. Thanks for listening to the Made of Savannah podcast. Do us a favor, write us a review, give us a rating. Make sure you subscribe or follow the podcast and share this podcast with someone you know. Follow us on Instagram at Made of Savannah. And a huge thanks to our sponsors, Savoy Society, Colleagues and Lovers, and the fabulous Savannah Cabaret. If you or someone you know has a great Savannah story to tell, be sure to get in touch with us. We would love to hear it. The welcome mat is always out.